This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky here in studio. Jack McGraw running the controls back in Houston behind the booth. It is Friday night. It is Memorial Day weekend, a long weekend. You have made it. You're here with us. We've got the NBA playoffs. We're going to do a deep dive on that. We're going to go deep into the NHL playoffs as well. Stephen Ellis from the Hockey News is going to help us with the puck talk. We're going to talk about the match is back. Tom Brady reuniting with Phil Mickelson for a showdown against Aaron Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau. Brady already talking a lot of smack about it. We're going to talk about the human lightning rod, Tim Tebow. We're going to have some Julio Jones talk, discuss the latest on that front with Matt Caroli from the Talkin' Birdie podcast. And we're going to have a little gambling corner with Connor Mack, a sports handicapper from Pub Sports Radio. You're not going to want to miss it. Right now, though, let's bring in the man who makes it all possible, Jack McGraw. How you doing on this lovely Friday night?
Doing good. And you and I were just talking off the air. Apparently, Tom Brady used to play for the Patriots. Is that a thing?
Yeah, I've heard the rumors. I can't confirm or deny them. But apparently that was once a thing, they say. No idea, but I hope it worked out well for Tom and for the Patriots franchise. You know, it'd be nice if they made the playoffs during that tenure, but it may just be a myth. It's all a foggy memory at this point, Jack.
It was like when Steve Nash played for the Mavericks. I was too young, so I don't actually have any visual representation of him playing for the Mavericks. So did it happen? I guess I'll never know.
Yeah, YouTube and NBA TV, in the case of the Mavs and Nash, they say that it did, but I'm skeptical as well. I'm with you on that front. So I can't wait to dive into this rundown. We've got a full slate of NBA games on the menu. We're going to look at big picture takeaways and dissect each and every series. We're going to do the same with the NHL, just one game on the ice tonight, but it is a big one between the Knights and the Wild. So we're going to start with the hoop talk up next. Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky here on the mic. Jack McGraw producing the show back in Houston. We're going to dive into the association, the NBA playoffs. ESPN.com tells me that the Hawks are up 45-39 on the Knicks right now, and that's where we begin. Atlanta was in position to go up 2-0. There were two turning points in Game 2. The first was when Derrick Rose's layup got blocked by Clint Capella. The ball came out to Julius Randle on the left wing. He stepped back behind the line and nailed a three to cut the Hawks' lead to single digits. DeAndre Hunter answered that with a three of his own, but after that, the Knicks went on an 18-3 run, and they went from being down by 12 to up one at the end of the third quarter. And when Randle hit that three, the crowd helped get New York back in the game. Now, it is disgusting and inexcusable that a fan spit on Trae Young, but the crowd at MSG overall, electric and an amazing atmosphere. Probably the one, not surprisingly, that I've enjoyed the most in the NBA or the NHL playoffs. And it wasn't that the Hawks handled the crowd at MSG poorly. It was the injection of energy that the fans at the world's most famous arena gave to the Knicks. And the other turning point in that game was Nate McMillan taking too long to get Trae Young back in the game. He subbed out with 2:21 left in the third quarter. He came back in with 8:34 remaining in the fourth. While he was on the bench, the Hawks scored 6 points. In that time, the game went from being tied at 72 to the Knicks going up by 10. Earl the Pearl Monroe. And if you don't know him, he's a legend in the sport. During a commercial break, go to YouTube quickly and pull up some of his highlights. Trust me, you're going to be enthralled and entertained. Here's what Earl the Pearl had to say after the game on Twitter. Quote, Nate McMillan might have just given the series away. You never rest your guys when you are in complete control and can go up two games away from home. They took their foot off the Knicks' neck. And he's absolutely right. And you know what Nate McMillan had to say about it after the game? Quote, Trae Young played 35 minutes. That's a lot of minutes. That's our normal rotation. Nate McMillan is a veteran head coach. He's fantastic. He's going to have the interim tag removed and be there for years to come. He knows better than this. I get not going through the media to hold yourself accountable. That's fine. But in the locker room, I hope he said, guys, this one was on me. I messed up. I'm going to be better and be prepared to play longer next game. Tonight is a huge game in this series with it now tied at 1 when it could have been 2-0 Atlanta. The Hawks are the better team in this series. They have more balance and they are the much better team offensively, top 10 during the regular season in a league where, thanks to where the rules are present day, offense matters more than defense. They should win this best of 7. But they have to get John Collins going. The idea for me, play him more with the second unit. Through 2 games, Collins, one of their most important players, is averaging 6.5 points and 4.5 rebounds. In the regular season, he was giving them 17-7. He had no points in game 2, goose egg. He only took 2 shots, and he had 2 rebounds. This is one part foul trouble, one part getting phased out as Trae Young and Bogdan Bogdanovic handle the heavy lifting. But John Collins needs to be more assertive. And for the Knicks, I wish in this game that they had started Derrick Rose to help the offense out. Elfrid Payton played 5 minutes and was a -7 in game 2. He only played 8 in game 1. It was even less in game 2. He has been a negative and a detriment to the Knicks trying to win these games. I understand the idea. Rose thrives off the bench, quickly as a rookie. But to me, if you're just giving away points at the start of games, that can come back to bite you. Like, I don't know, when you lose by 2 points on a floater just before the buzzer in game 1. So to me, Elfrid Payton, I get the concept of starting him. That way you don't burn through fouls from Derrick Rose. You don't wear these guys out. But let's be honest, Tibbs is already doing that anyways when it comes to Rose. Start him. Get him a quick breather around the 6 or 7 minute mark. Bring in quickly so you can preserve the idea of not trying to throw him into a role that might not suit him best, starting as a rookie, something he hasn't really done all season, and get this offense going from the jump, especially on the road now. So to me, that's what the Knicks should have done, and perhaps they'll make that change moving forward in game 4. But you give away free points at the start of a game, you can make the case it already cost them once, and it might do so again tonight. We'll see how it plays out. Next up, Clippers Mavericks. Another one of the most entertaining and probably the most surprising series to this point. Luka Doncic, I can't believe I'm saying this, he's the best player in this series. As good a defender as Kawhi Leonard is, especially when it comes to being elite on the ball against the best talent in the league, Doncic is proving to me that he is the top guy in this series. Through 2 games, he's averaging 35 points, 9 assists, and 8.5 rebounds. He's getting to the foul line. He's taking 7 free throws per game. He's shooting 26.5 shots and making 50% of them. He's launching 12 threes and converting nearly 42% of those. And the Clippers supporting cast is getting exposed. Let's exclude Paul George, who's putting up 25 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. So it's certainly not his fault. But in game 1, Marcus Morris went 2-for-8 with 4 points, and he was a -23. Zubac is getting roasted anytime Doncic wants to attack him because of LA's lazy switches. Pat Beverly, it's the same deal. And we know he doesn't add value offensively. Serge Ibaka played 6 minutes in game 2 because of his back injury, which before the playoffs, he admitted, has been bothering him all season. And now he's out for game 3. Rondo, he tied Doncic for a game-high 7 assists. He was also a team-high plus 13, but he only played 19 minutes. I'm not sure what's going on there, what kind of friction exists between him and Ty Lue, if it extends to Rondo and some of the top guys on the team as well. But he needs to play more than 19 minutes because he's been one of their most reliable rotation players. Meanwhile, the Mavericks are rolling through two games. They're making more threes per contest than any other team in the playoffs. That's 17.5 on average. They've also got the best shooting percentage from beyond the arc. And they're taking 35 threes and making 50% of them per game. Porzingis is active without the ball, something we're not really accustomed to seeing from him. His cutting is creating a numbers advantage, and it's leading to him getting easy baskets at the rim, and it's also opening up open looks for Dallas's role players from beyond the arc. Lazy switches are starting to also kill the Clippers. Doncic gets to decide what's on the menu. Is it Beverly or is it Zubac? And as a team, the Clippers are not mentally tough. In challenging situations, I expect them to wilt because they haven't done anything else. So let's see if they bounce back, starting with a must-win game three tonight. And then this is one of the more unfortunate series to be discussing, Lakers-Suns. It should have been one of the most exciting, but Chris Paul's shoulder injury on a fluky play where he bumps into his own teammate, and then afterwards he says he thinks he heard it crack. That has changed the complexion of what should have been a highly competitive series. Now, even with a healthy Paul, I didn't buy into the notion that the Suns would actually advance and beat the Lakers in a best of seven. They've got LeBron and AD. I don't really need to go further than that. But without Chris Paul being healthy and effective and used more than anything else as a decoy, it goes from being a competitive series where you're curious to see just how far can Phoenix push LA to something that we just want to simulate and get it over with because we know the outcome, because we're watching LeBron and AD play out there at less than 100%. And so here's the thing. If you wanted to talk yourself into the idea that the Suns could have actually won this series if they were healthy, start with LeBron's injury. He's averaging 21 points, 9 assists, and 6 rebounds. So numbers-wise, the production is still there. But he seems to be pacing himself through this series, picking his spots, conserving his energy. He's not turning the corner on defenders as often as we're accustomed to seeing from King James. And so that right there is a red flag moving forward. But the path to the finals for the Lakers, we'll get to Utah's issues in the next segment. The Jazz are going to be LA's next opponent. But in the conference finals, if the Clippers don't recover, is it the Lakers against the Mavericks? Are they playing a Nuggets team that doesn't have Jamal Murray? It seems to me like the Western Conference, which once looked so formidable, is starting to crumble around LA. And like I said, they've got their own injury concerns. Anthony Davis, before he got to Los Angeles, it seemed like he would die and come back to life on a game-by-game basis. And just, it felt like a matter of time, I hate to say this, before a serious injury happened. And instead of popping up as he rides on the ground, he just stays down. And we fear that the worst starts to come true. Last year, I was amazed by how durable he was with the Lakers in his first season there. And certainly, having the time in between the season pausing and resuming in the bubble in Orlando, that naturally helped him. But still, he's put in a lot of work on his body to get more healthy and to be more reliable to his teammates, much like Steph Curry addressing the problems with his ankles and why those weren't allowing him to consistently be out on the floor, something that afforded the Warriors a sweetheart of a deal with their best player. With Anthony Davis this year, though, a little more shaky, a little more like New Orleans Anthony Davis, where he's going down quite a bit. And he got the tendinosis that he had to deal with earlier in the season. Before that, it was a calf strain. And so then you see him in this most recent matchup where he hurts his leg and he starts hobbling around. So the injury front, that bug is starting to bite the Lakers too. But I'm less concerned about their top two guys, especially because AD is going to learn from LeBron James, as I'm sure he already started that process last year, how to pace himself through the playoffs. That's what we see with LeBron. And it looks like that road back to the finals might not really challenge him all that much and allow him to conserve even more energy than you would expect on the road back to defending the title. But a cause for concern for the Lakers, when they run into a more formidable opponent, which as I'm saying here, might not be until the NBA Finals, their supporting cast is worse than it was last year. Markieff Morris, non-existent. They're trying to dust off Wes Matthews, and he's been okay. Can he get better? Perhaps. And it just goes on and on down the line where the only reliable rotation member right now I can't believe I'm saying this, is Alex Caruso. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's also dealing with an injury, less reliable than he was a season ago when he stepped up in the playoffs. Playoff Rondo was huge for them. He's gone. Dennis Schroeder, he's dealt with injuries. He's dealt with COVID-19, but nonetheless has not been as good. I've been surprised by how effective defensively, but overall they expected more. Marc Gasol has been confined to the bench. Andre Drummond, starting to play better, but still just mediocre. And so, to me, the Lakers supporting cast is a cause for concern, and so are the injuries at the top of the roster with LeBron and AD. But ultimately, I look at who's challenging them in the West and remain convinced that they're going back to the finals. From there, I'm riding with the Brooklyn Nets. It's not a bold take because upsets, that's not what this league is known for as you get further and further into the playoffs. But I think it's going to be Nets-Lakers, and ultimately, I think Brooklyn prevails. Coming up next, we've got plenty of other series around the association to dive into. So stick with us on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw producing the show back in Houston. We're going to stick with the topic from the first segment, and that is going around each and every NBA series to give you big picture takeaways and analyzing how these matchups have played out to this point. And so let's look right now at what's going on between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat. And the first question, let's not dance around it. Were the Miami Heat a bubble fraud last year? And to me, I think the case is absolutely unequivocally a yes. They capitalized on the bubble. The Miami Heat, with their legendary culture and being as mentally tough as any team in the league, they were best positioned to take advantage of the bubble, and to their credit, they did. But what we have to ask when we label them or even ask the question, were they fraudulent last year in getting to the conference finals, or getting to the NBA finals, excuse me, is what exactly that means when we say that they were frauds. Well, to me, here's what it means. They had a league average offense last year during the regular season, and they had the 12th ranked defense. That's not the profile of a title contender. It stands to reason that they overachieved, that they outperformed expectations and got more out of the season being relocated to a bubble than any other team. And that's to their credit. So when I say that they're frauds, it's not necessarily a bad thing that they went all the way to the finals and at the end started to challenge the Lakers. I didn't believe they'd actually pull off the upset, but they started to push them and make it more compelling. Now you look at this season, and they are clearly a worse team. They lost Jay Crowder. Goran Dragic hasn't played as well or been as consistent as he was last year, which is understandable. He's 35 years old, and he's dealt with injuries. Tyler Hero has been dramatically worse than he was in the bubble. He's averaging 7 points, 3 rebounds, and less than 2 assists per game to start the playoffs, which are almost over already for Miami. He looked like a potential all-star last year in the bubble. At the trade deadline, Miami was so invested in him, they wouldn't give him up to go get Kyle Lowry. If you add Kyle Lowry to Miami, not only am I picking them to beat the Bucks in round one, but they are a legitimate title contender. Now, here's the deal on the Lowry front. The Heat could get him in free agency, but Butler will be 32, and Lowry will turn 36 during the season. So my question to Pat Riley, why did you wait? Especially because now you're gambling that you might not get him. Maybe he chooses to go back home and play for the Philadelphia 76ers, for instance. Now, they probably could have gotten him while keeping Tyler Hero if they parted with Duncan Robinson based on the other offers around the league and how so many teams decided we're not going to pony up to get Kyle Lowry. Robinson is a restricted free agent at the end of the year, and he may have priced himself out of Miami already. So I don't understand the decision to wait to essentially pass on this season and competing for a title, especially when you look at the price tag probably being someone that you're going to lose anyways. So in the long run, the Heat will be just fine. It's one of the most attractive destinations in the NBA. Who doesn't want to go make millions living on South Beach, playing for the Miami Heat, learning from Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, one of the best coaches in the NBA, and probably, especially if you're a star player, which is who this conversation revolves around, having a chance to compete for championships. But Riley has his work cut out for him this offseason. As for the Bucks, this was the matchup that they wanted to start the playoffs. They needed this series to begin to exercise their playoff demons of the past. And they won game one the way they won it. They got hit in the mouth in the first quarter, and they had to pull it out and get in the mud in overtime to pull out the victory. That was affirmation to them that the changes they've made, bringing in Drew Holiday, adding Bobby Portis and Bryn Forbes to strengthen their rotation, which was a huge part of how Miami exposed them last year, working to become more flexible during the regular season, using it as a testing ground to evolve. It's paying off for them, and they can see it. Now, next round is a much bigger challenge when they go up against the Brooklyn Nets. And they're going to be doing so, unfortunately, we found out today, without Dante DiVincenzo, thanks to a serious and concerning tendon injury. That's a huge loss for them. He's a part of their starting lineup, which is also their closing lineup, which is also the five-man unit they rode throughout the entire five-minute overtime stretch in Game 1. So losing DiVincenzo hurts, and it thins their rotation, and it's going to make the middle of games more challenging because those rotation players that they have left, guys like P.J. Tucker and Portis and Forbes, whoever the hot hand is that night and based on the matchup, they can go ahead and join the closing lineup, but it's going to tax them even further in the middle of games, especially guys like Chris Middleton, who might bear more responsibility defensively all of a sudden. So when you're the underdog and you lose a vital contributor from your rotation, it's probably going to catch up with them against the Nets. And let's be honest, maybe having a healthy Dante DiVincenzo is not the difference between them beating Brooklyn or going home next round. But here's the thing about that. If they lose to the eventual champion or Eastern Conference representative, I don't think it will or should dent their belief in this year's growth. And as long as it's a competitive series, they can have conviction about entering next season as a legitimate title contender. Now let's look at the Jazz and the Grizzlies. Ja Morant, he is the story from the first two games. 37 points, 6 assists, and 4 rebounds. That's what he's putting up. So offensively, Mike Conley has been fantastic. 20 points, 15 assists in game 2. Defensively, not so much, and we're going to dive into those concerns in just a second. But as I continue to look at some individual production here, Donovan Mitchell held out in game 1. Didn't like it. Didn't seem like the Jazz handled it all that well. Almost like they knew what the decision was well before they told him. And that's why Mitchell went public with his frustrations with the organization. But he comes out in game 2. He looks great outside of when he took the hard fall. And he puts up 25 points. A vital reason, of course, why Utah was able to tie the series up at 1. And we also got to give credit to the Stifle Tower, Rudy Gobert. 21 points, 13 rebounds, 4 blocks, and yes, his screen assists do add value. But the way that Ja Morant is picking this team apart makes a glaring concern of theirs, and that's Utah's perimeter defense, further convince me that they belong in the same bin as the Al Horford, Joe Johnson-led Atlanta Hawks. In the next round, when they get the Lakers, they have to be perfect to advance. And I can write off game 1 from this series against Memphis as they were rusty, they didn't have Donovan Mitchell, but Dylan Brooks is averaging 27 points against them through 2 games. Him and Ja Morant combined for 70 in game 2. I can't look at how the Utah Jazz are playing right now and buy into this notion that they're getting to the conference finals. And if they're healthy in the next round, but don't challenge the Lakers and don't make it competitive, well, then it's going to be really difficult for them to work through during the offseason. And quickly, I want to get to the Nuggets and Blazers as well. One of the biggest adjustments, of course, is Denver putting Aaron Gordon on Damian Lillard, where it looked like Denver was ill-equipped for this matchup against Portland's three-headed monster in the backcourt. Gordon has done a terrific job of just limiting Damian Lillard a little bit, making life more difficult on him. We're talking about a great player who's still averaging 38 points and 9 assists. But what's really costing Portland is that they stink defensively. And so Nikola Jokic went from living on the block in game 1 when they lost to operating primarily in the high post. In the last 2 contests, Jokic is averaging 37 points and 5 assists to go along with 9.5 rebounds. And in game 3, 21 points from Austin Rivers. Shout out to him for being able to do that. Denver needed all of them. But what happens if that's not the case next game? That's my question to the Denver Nuggets. Coming up, we're going to talk about the match. Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson, Aaron Rodgers, Bryson DeChambeau. That's coming up on Sports Map Radio Network. You're listening to the Diehards.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
SportsMap Radio Network, Bobby Krivitsky here. And you think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs? Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Now let's get out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. We are honored to be joined right now by Stephen Ellis, the web editor for the Hockey News and also a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on the Diehards tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
For sure. And so let's start, of course. Most of us were eagerly waiting a matchup between the Avalanche and the Golden Knights. And with Las Vegas leading their series against the Wild 3-1, we were on the verge of getting it. But Minnesota has bounced back with two straight wins, including a 3-0 victory in Game 6. Tonight is Game 7. How do you see this do-or-die matchup shaking out?
I actually predict this to go 7 games, but I don't think I expected it to kind of go the way it was, where it looks like Vegas should have won this series by now, but Minnesota just never gives up. I'm still going to go with Vegas. I did pick them to win the Stanley Cup at the beginning of the year, and I'm going to stick with that pick, but obviously they're running into a hot goalie. Cam Talbot's playing well. Minnesota just continues to grind their way here, so Vegas just needs their depth to be there. They need to put pucks in the net. It sounds easy, but that's something where we look at the last 2 years where they come into these teams that just kind of shut them down, and it's been hard. So they really just need to come flying out here.
And speaking of series that were at one point 3-1, the Montreal Canadiens pulled out a 4-3 win over the Toronto Maple Leafs in Game 5. Game 6 is tomorrow night. How do the Canadiens extend this series and force a Game 7?
That's a series that's very important to me because I grew up in a family of Montreal and Toronto fans, so it's been fun to see that finally. But in terms of Montreal there, it's one where I thought if the Canadiens were able to win last night, they would have all the momentum because they're going back in front of their fan base, and we know the Montreal crowd so excited to be back. It's only going to be 2,500 people, but it's going to sound closer like 20,000 people. And then if they win that game, that would be big because all of a sudden you look at Toronto and their gremlins of years and years of falling in game sevens and against big rivals. The pressure will be on the Leafs to not blow it. So Montreal, there's not a lot of pressure going on. As long as Carey Price plays well, they can just keep running. But they really need to figure out how to score a few more goals. The fact that 4-goal game was a big deal because they finally scored 4 goals in a game, that's not a good sign. So they need to be out there, score early, make the Leafs chase, and Carey Price needs to do what he does best.
Yeah, they need to pick it up. I hope there is a Game 7. I hope you're able to watch it with your family. I hope you're able to have a mild civil war, nothing too hectic or feisty, just enjoying what's sure to be a stressful but highly compelling and entertaining matchup. So I hope that this series goes the distance. One that's just about to get started tomorrow night is Bruins Islanders. New York was better against Boston for much of the regular season, but the Bruins, after the trade deadline, where most notably they picked up Taylor Hall, started to prove more formidable. How do you see this series shaking out?
For me, I think this is going to be Boston's series to lose, and obviously we know the Islanders, they play really playoff-style hockey. They'll grind you down until there's nothing left, but the Boston Bruins just have they just look so much different since the trade-down line, bringing in Taylor Hall. They have more scoring options than just the perfection line. The goaltending's been solid. Obviously, the Islanders, they got good goaltending there with Sorokin, the way he's playing. Defense, they both got good D. So if we're looking at what's the difference maker, I think it's got to be the offense, and that's just what Boston's got going for them. So I do like what Boston's got here. I think this will be to a point, the kind of the narrative is if the Islanders win the series, it's not good for hockey or not good for ratings because they're not an exciting team. But they're getting to the point where they are the last couple of years for a reason. So they'll grind the Bruins down and make them chase it. But I do think the Bruins are the team to beat there.
Steven, you might hate me for this next question, but it is the talk radio industry. So I get a lot of people asking me, is there any friction between Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins? The Isles, they send them home, and this team, they underachieved. The Islanders, it's fair to say that they were the better team and they deserve to advance and all that, but it does seem like there are fences that need to be mended, I'll say, between Crosby and the Penguins. Is there any chance that he actually finishes his career in a different uniform?
I think because he's won all those Stanley Cups, I don't think he leaves. I know everyone wants to win a Stanley Cup, but what's another cup to his credit? I think he'll stay there his whole career. It's a big deal when you play your whole career one place. He's comfortable there, and I don't think he'd retire earlier than just because of everything he's done than go to a different team. But obviously, if he's there, and if I'm Crosby, I'm saying, like, guys, we still got a couple of years left where we could be competitive. We need to figure out this goaltending situation. We need to figure out this defensive situation. We've seen this team win Stanley Cups where scoring depth was not a big thing for them, but they found luck elsewhere. Well, they didn't have a goalie that's been able to kind of save them the last couple of years. Their defense, Chris Letang, looked really good, but it's kind of that being the only guy. And then obviously their offense. We knew that team could be a dangerous team when they're fully healthy, but they do need a bit more help, especially in that where Tristan Jarry is just not the answer. I was shocked he traded Matt Murray, not because Matt Murray is any good. We've seen him. He's kind of struggled the last couple of years, but more so you putting Tristan Jarry in the starting role with no proper backup was kind of risky, and we saw kind of how that worked out for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was surprised by that decision. I took it as they know a lot more than me. They must be confident that Jari's the guy to lead this team moving forward. They removed the safety net there without Matt Murray in the picture, and unfortunately for the Penguins, it didn't work out. As they look to retool, how dramatic of a makeover do you think it's going to be? And who are some of those notable faces in Pittsburgh that might be on their way out the door?
Well, that's tough because they don't really have a lot of prospects to work with. They don't have a lot of great picks. And unless they're going to start tanking immediately and get a guy like Shane Wright or Brad Lambert in the next couple of years or Connor Bedard, you're not exactly going to go change your franchise with the draft with these later picks. So they're kind of hurting themselves. The easiest answer in terms of just maybe a cop-out would be saying trading Evgeny Malkin because you know, the guy that seems to play really well when he doesn't have Crosby there, when he's the only guy on the team that they're really putting the pressure on. He seems to play well. He may benefit from somewhere else. But at the same time, I don't think Crosby wants him to go. This is a 1-2 punch that's been so good for so long. I think they want to keep that together as long as possible. So there truly is no easy answer. They don't have a lot of prospects to move. They don't have a lot of really good like depth guys that they can kind of trade and get good value for. They might have to trade one of the big stars. If that means moving Malkin, it might be the best thing for the team, but that's pretty extreme. So it's tough.
Steven, last night I'm watching Hurricanes Predators, another phenomenal NHL playoff game that goes into overtime, and I'm multitasking, and they come to a stop and play, so I start to take care of what I'm working on, and all of a sudden I hear goal. The puck dropped and bang right off it. Aho able to get his stick on the shot for the game winner. Carolina advances against Nashville, but now they have a much more daunting task against the Lightning. How do they keep this series competitive?
Well, this is one where their goaltending is going to need to step up. Obviously, Nedeljkovic had a really good first round. He's been really good all season long, but he's going up against one of the best in the NHL right now, Andrei Vasilevskiy. So it is going to be really tough for him to outperform. So Carolina is going to have to get creative. We know that Carolina's got really good defense, but so does Tampa. Carolina's got some really good offense, but so does Tampa. To a point, it almost is like they kind of cancel themselves out. If you're looking at who the best player in the series is, it's Nikita Kucherov. If you're looking for the best goalie, it's Vasilevskiy. If you're looking for the best defenseman, Slavin's been playing really good, but I still go with Victor Hedman. So Tampa's got the better players. Carolina just needs a full team effort. They need to be able to shut down those big guys, and they need to make Vasilevskiy look human for once, and that's going to be tough. So even though the Hurricanes had such a good season or one of the Cup favorites, you're going up against a team that still was dominant even without their best player all season long. So it's going to be really tough, but I'm giving this to Tampa, but Carolina's going to put a good fight. I think the winner of this series is going all the way.
And it's a perfect segue right there, Stephen, because the other team you have going all the way and winning it are the Knights. We know that Sunday night it's going to be the Avs against whoever wins Game 7 between Las Vegas and Minnesota. So let's flip it on you now, because obviously you've got the Knights advancing past this round and the next one. But what does Colorado have to do to beat, let's look at it, let's say the Knights, but really it's either one. But from a matchup perspective, if we get the one that has more hype and more hope that it's, in fact, who draws the Avalanche and the Knights, those two teams match up, what does Colorado have to do to advance?
Well, Colorado, they just got to keep doing what they did all year when they went out and won the President's Trophy. Obviously, their goaltending held up when it was healthy, and it didn't seem like it mattered really who was in net, because they throw in another goalie, and they've come in and play well, too. They've got a really good defensive system. Cale Makar's playing some outstanding hockey that could earn them a bunch of Norris Trophy votes. The offense has been good. Nathan MacKinnon just has to be kind of unstoppable, and I know that seems like it's asking a lot, but it's Nathan MacKinnon. He's one of the best players in the league. He could do it. The defense is going to be a big difference there, because while they've done a good job, I still think I like Tampa's defense a bit more from an overall depth perspective. But this has to be a very tight one. I really want to see it just for the sake of, like, this will be a great hockey series. I think it will go the distance. I know a lot of people would probably put Colorado winning that, but I just got to go with Vegas, just because I think they're just going to kind of rise to the occasion when they need to.
Yeah, that's the heavyweight matchup that I've put my cards on the table. I'm hoping to see. But you can't go wrong with however a Game 7 shakes out. They're almost always highly entertaining and captivating. So I think at a minimum we're going to be entertained by what happens between Minnesota and Las Vegas in this Game 7 tonight. Who are some of the players now, as we look from an individual perspective, who have really impressed you this postseason?
For all teams or just for Vegas?
Just going around the NHL.
Oh, well, the one guy that really kind of, I think, really impressed me a bit was Matthew Shane in Nashville. He had a couple of really good games, but they really needed that out of him, because obviously his tenure there has not been great. So it was nice to see kind of what he was able to do and really make that team competitive. Obviously, UC Soros was really good in that. Ilya Sorokin, I think, has been outstanding for the Islanders. This is a guy that had no real he had no NHL playoff experience. He's come in, he's taken the role from Semyon Varlamov, who was good last year in the playoffs, and has kind of really shined ever since. And the other one being a guy that's kind of he kind of fell out of favor, I think, with a lot of Leaf fans over the last couple of years, is Willem Nylander. I think Nylander has been one of the best players in the playoffs, where the Leafs, their top line is getting shut down, and Nylander continues to be there every single night, being a good contributor. I think he's been very solid for that team. I think Carey Price has been outstanding for Montreal. The other end, Jack Campbell's been good. So a lot of goal lead, but this has just kind of been a year where you look, and there's not a lot of bad goaltending, or the teams that had bad goaltending already out. So it's some pretty good guys left. So it's been a very fun playoffs for sure.
It certainly has, Stephen. And now I want to go ahead and give you the floor. If there's any work you want to promote, if you want to go ahead and plug your social media handle, whatever you want to go ahead and promote right now, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, on Twitter, Stephen Ellis, THN. I've been covering the World Hockey Championship a lot during the day. It's going to be a lot of good stuff. This is a really good tournament where there's no superstars. So we're seeing teams like Kazakhstan and Great Britain and Latvia and teams like that take center stage. And I think it's been a lot of fun. So we've been doing a lot of that. And, of course, there'll be a lot of NHL coverage throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs from me on my Twitter and at thehockeynews.com.
Stephen Ellis from the Hockey News, also a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. All right. When we come back, I plugged it earlier. Now we will get to Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson against Aaron Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau. It is the match. We have the details. I'll bring you all that and more about this reunion between Brady and Mickelson and the shots being fired from TB12. That's coming up next on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic, Jack McGraw producing the show. Back in Houston. So far, we've done a deep dive, an exploration, if you will, into the playoff series on the hardwood, looking at Knicks, Hawks, Clippers, Mavs, Lakers, Suns, Bucks, Heat, Jazz, Grizzlies, and Nuggets, Blazers, and thinking about big picture takeaways from each and every one of those matchups. We talked a lot of NHL playoffs, looking around that league with Stephen Ellis from the Hockey News. We're going to get to Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson, Aaron Rodgers, Bryson DeChambeau. It is the match, I promise. That is coming up in the next segment. We're also going to talk about the human lightning rod that is Tim Tebow. We're going to dive into Julio Jones and the latest on that front with Matt Caroli from the Talking Birdie podcast. And we're into a gambling corner with Connor Mack from Sports Pub Radio. He's going to help you guys make some money this weekend betting on the NBA and the NHL postseason. Jack, hour number one, just about in the books. What has been your favorite take that you've heard so far? I'm here, Jack. Were you able to get the question?
No, what was the question again? I'm so sorry.
No worries at all. So the question is, we've gone around the association. We've looked at each and every one of these NBA playoff series. We had Stephen Ellis on to talk about the NHL postseason. What has been your favorite take so far that you've heard tonight?
Ooh. I like when y'all were talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Carolina Hurricanes, because I think that's the most interesting matchup going into the series. Now, I do think that if Vegas beats Minnesota in this Game 7, which they should, that's going to set up between the two best NHL teams in the Avalanche and the Knights. I think one of those two teams will come out as a champion of the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I think that there's a good chance that they could be seeing either the Lightning or the Hurricanes.
I like the take, but I cannot buy into the Hurricanes advancing past the Lightning, but I'm with you there, and this Game 7 tonight should be highly entertaining. Can't wait for it. And now, of course, Jack, the downside. Do you have a least favorite take that you've heard tonight?
You know, we were kind of light on Mavericks talk, and me being the Dallas Mavericks fan, I expected a little bit more. So that's what I took to heart.
You know, I thought I gave them a lot of love. I dove into Doncic's numbers. I looked at Porzingis being more active off the ball and how it's opened up numbers advantages for Dallas. Talked about their shooting as a collective unit. So I actually disagree with you there, Jack. But
I appreciate the whole show to be Mavericks talk.
Yeah, we can't quite go that far, but I appreciate your Mavericks love. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the match. Listen to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.